All right, Parshas Truma, everybody, 5780. So here's the Pasuk, Perek Chavav, Pasuk Aleph. Parshas Truma obviously deals with the stuff that we're getting ready for the Mishkan itself. We're starting from the beginning. You have the concept of just the Mishkan itself, what to make, etc. The Aron Kodesh is the first kli that's made. The Shulchan, the Menorah is mentioned. The Urios are brought up in Perek Chavav, Pasuk Aleph. It says, Vesa Mishkan, the Mishkan, Tase Eser Urios. You have to make 10 of these curtains. Sheish Mashzor, they should be made of twisted linen with Tcheles Argaman Tolashani, the three types of wool, blue, purple, and scarlet red wool. Kruvim, they should have on it some type of Kruvim Maise Choshev. It's going to be some type of embroidery on it, Tasso some. That's how you have to make it. These are the 10 curtains that go on top. Now we're going to explain them a little bit. Rashi says that these 10 Urios were used as a roof, as well as decoration outside of the krushim, the beams that were used on the outside of the Mishkan. They stood on the outside, and they were on top of the Mishkan itself, as a roof itself, to cover them up and protect them. The Netziv argues that these psukim are only talking about the ones that are a rooftop, not the ones that are going to be the walls all around. Either way, we're definitely talking about the Urios in some way that are going to be there. Now, the Rashbam says that the reason why they're called the Mishkan, because again, we're calling them Urios, but they're also, these are the Mishkan itself. It's because they covered the Aron and all the other great Kalim in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Kodesh, which means that these are the ones, so to speak, that fill the Shechina in that area. The Mishkan, which means allowing a place for the Shechina to rest, that was done through the Urios. That's the concept mentioned over here. The Sfon of the Chizkuni says there were even pictures of Malachim on it, because we have a Pasuk in Yecheskel that says, Omdim Mimaolo by the Srothim. They're Miminu Mismol, that the Srothim were on top and on the right and the left side of, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Yeshayim, sorry, not Yecheskel, which is what the Nevi'im saw when they looked up above. There were Malachim surrounding Malachim on top, so the Malachim that were pictured on the Urios was ke'ilu, so to speak, as if there are the malachim surrounding the Shechina up there in Shemayim as well. Yeah. It's really hard to answer a question 3 minutes into a shir. I'm just going to forewarn you. If I answer this question later, I'm going to be super ticked off at you. But yeah, go ahead. Okay. But if a Kadosh Baruch Hu says to do it, then it's mutter, so there's no problem whatsoever, right? That's first of all. Second of all, it may not have been kruvim. Hold up. And I said, I'm going to be really ticked off. So hold on a second, okay? So we're going to have that. That's Rashi and the Rashbam. Now, how many were there and how did it go, guys? No, well, it was like this. Each one of these Urios were 4 amos wide, okay? So think 4 amos wide this way, and they were 28 amos long. They went over the Mishkan. Now, the Mishkan was 10 amos on the top. They went over the Mishkan, 28, which means 10 amos right over the middle. And then if you have 28, that's 9 and 9. Amos that went over on the sides, which meant that with the Mishkan, which was 10 amos tall and 10 amos wide, right, when you went through the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right, it was 10. So you'd have 4 amos wide and you'd have 10 of them, which is 40 amos altogether. The actual Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim were 30 amos, 10 amos for the Kodesh HaKadoshim, 20 amos for the Kodesh. But that's okay. They didn't surround the opening. The opening was uncovered, but it went over 20 of the Kodesh, left this side open, 10 of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then it was another 10 amos going all the way down to the ground, right, hitting right over there. That's the 40 amos. Now, that's the 10 times altogether. There was the other one, which was 28 amos. Again, 10 amos over the width, and then 9 amos down, 9 amos down, and it showed the bottoms of the krushim, of the beams that surrounded the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's how the Urios went. On top of these Urios that were Sheish, Tcheles, Argam, and Tolashani, atop of that, there were 11 Urios, 11 of them, also 4 by 30, those on top of them. They were Urios Ezim. They were made with goat skins. They were made with goat skins. That was on top of these Urios of Sheish, etc. On top of that, there was a urea, another urea made of oros elim me'adamim, which were skins of rams painted red. And then on top of that, there was the tachash skin. Some say that the oros elim me'adamim, the tachash skin, was half and half, that there were 5 skins from the oros elim me'adamim, 5 skins from the tachash, and they were attached together. Either way, that's what it was. Even these ureos, it was not sewn together all the way through. There were 5 and 5 of these Urios, the Urios Sheish, we'll call them. There were 5 and 6 of the Urios Ezim. Okay, Urios Ezim. Now, what does that mean? It means they were sewn together. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 were sewn together. That's 4 amos each. So 5 times 4 is 20 amos, which obviously, in our minds, takes over the Kodesh, right? And then the Kodesh HaKadoshim had its own 20 amos. 10 amos here, 10 amos toward the bottom, 20 amos. They were connected, those 20 amos and 20 amos, meaning the 5 curtains and the 5 curtains, by these little chain links that were on each side, right, that connected the 5 and the 5. Okay, same thing with the 6 and 5. There were 6, one overhung a little bit by the opening, by the Urios Ezim, one overhung for a few little bit over there, and then it went to the Kodesh, and then it was chained, and then there were 5 going this way, 6 and 5 by the Urios Ezim, by the Urias of the Tachash, and the Rosh Elim Adam, and it's a little bit more confusing, but no need to go into that right now. Rashi says each one of the Urios was extremely thick. Why? They're made up of 4 strings twisted together. You've got, again, Sheish, the linen, Tcheles, Argaman, and Tolas Shani, all made of wool. Yes, it was Shatnes, that was okay in the Beis Hamikdash and the Mishkan. So therefore, they made 3 of wool, 1 of linen, they had 4 strings, and then each one of those strings were made up of 6 strings each. So meaning, there were 6 of wool, of purple wool, 6 of blue wool, 6 of red wool, and then 6 of linen. Those were together, so that's 6 times 4 is 24. Each string used to make up the Urios were 24 ply strings each. 24 ply. That's how thick the strings were and how big these curtains were. It was awesomely big curtains over here. Rav Hirsch argues with Rashi about the makeup, whether it's 6 and 4 or is it 4 and 6. Either way, everybody agrees it's 24 ply. 24 ply altogether. The Kliyoker says this pasuk is different in that every other kli is preceded by the word ve'asisa. You should make, or ve'asu by the Aron. It's a you should make, you should be involved with in some way, shape, or form. This one, look at what it says. Look at the top. There's a Mishkan ta'aseh, Esther Urios. It's not ve'asu or ve'asisa, and you make the Aron, and you should make the kruv, and you should make the etc. It's you already made it, so to speak. Ta'aseh, you're going to make it in such a way after it already says ve'asa Mishkan. Since the point of these Urios is to keep the Shechina in, says the Kliyoker, you can't write it that way. You can't write, make the Shechina stay by you. You can't do that. You can't say, v'asisa esa mishkan. You should make the Shechina. You can't do that. Instead, it says, v'esa mishkan, when the Shechina comes down, ta'aseh. It will be made by you covering up the Urios. But we can't use the word v'asisa. That gets it a little bit off. The Rabbeinu Ephraim says the reason it starts with a different word is because it was shown to Moshe Rabbeinu on the mountain, so he knew exactly what it was going to look like. So that, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, remember the Mishkan? Esa Mishkan that you saw up there in Shemayim? Remember that Mishkan? Ta'aseh. That's what I want you to make. I want you to make it exactly as that thing over there. And that's why it's HaMishkan with a hey. It's the same one that you saw above. That's what I want you to do over here. The Rabbeinu Bechaya says something interesting. He does seem a little bit off. Everybody knows, especially if you've been doing Daf Yomi, Nun Hei Amid Aleph, right, in Brachos, is where Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu to make the Mishkan, etc., and Moshe tells it over to Bezalel. And he tells Bezalel to make the Aron, the Shulchan, the Menorah, and then make the Mishkan. And then make the Mishkan. To which Bezalel says, Moshe Rabbeinu, something seems off here. It should be, what do you make first? Do you first bring in the furniture, or do you first have a house to put the furniture into? We should make the Mishkan first. And then we should make the Aron, the Shulchan, and the other Kalim. Why should we do the Kalim first and then that? And the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu responded to Bezalel and says, Shema Bezel El Hayisa. Maybe you are in the shadow of God, because that's what it seems what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me, to make the Mishkan first and then the Kalim. So everybody asks the Kasha, why did Moshe Rabbeinu switch it around if that's what Hashem said? And in this week's Parsha, it's clear. You make the Aron, then the Shulchan, then the Menorah, and then the Mishkan. It seems clear that this is the order. You make the Mishkan afterwards. Anyway, by the way, as a timeout, it didn't matter because they finished everything on Chaf Hei Kislev, which is what Chaf Hei Kislev is? Hanukkah, right? So they finished what we call Hanukkah today. They didn't build the Mishkan until Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The Mishkan wasn't made to put the Kalim into until Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So it really didn't make a difference. When we're saying, well, you should have had the house first and then the Kalim, It doesn't matter because you're not building it to Rosh Chodesh Rosh Chodesh Nisan anyway. For 2.5 months for Adar, Shvat, Teves, etc., for the rest of Teves, right, you really don't have to worry about anything because the Kelim apparently were protected and put somewhere without there being a Mishkan. So it doesn't really matter. Either way, says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, it's interesting how we're learning over here. The Arun Kodesh is mentioned first, says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, even though the Mishkan should have been made first. According to that Gemara, the Mishkan should have been made first. Nonetheless, the Arun is mentioned first because of its tremendous mila, that the reason why the Shekhinah came down, the whole reason why there's a Mishkan, is because of the Aron Kodesh. The Ramban says this in the beginning of the Parsha. The whole reason why there is a Mishkan is not because of the Urios, not because of a menorah, not because of the Shulchan, it's because of the Aron Kodesh. Because there's an Aron Kodesh, because Hashem wanted to speak to Moshe Rabbeinu on the Aron Kodesh, or to be around the Aron Kodesh, therefore we have a Mishkan. It's sort of like, that's the reason for everything. If that's the reason, that trade, that everything comes around, then the Aron is first, and everything follows. Then we go into the Mishkan itself. That's the idea behind it. The Malbim says that's exactly why the wording is switched. Everything else, V'asisa, etc., and this is Taseh, to indicate that it was being made before everything else. And this should be read not in order. It's sort of like Bezalel convinced him to make the Mishkan first, or so that's what Moshe Rabbeinu agreed to, and that's why it says the word Taseh, because of this idea that the Rabbeinu Bechaya is bringing up. Okay, the Ibn Ezra says an amazing thing, and this is going to lead us to the next part of this, of what the Kruvim looked like, okay, how the Kruvim were. When weaving these Urios, they made pictures of Kruvim, okay? Now, seemingly they're just Kruvim, and there were different images on either side. That's how the Ibn Ezra puts it, meaning you didn't have one image and then you saw the back of that image when you looked on the other side of the Uria. That's not what it was. You saw one image embroidered on the outside on one side, and on the other side, it was in another image. It didn't have to be a mirror or a copy. It was just another image. It didn't have to be in the same place. It could be like that. It could be off a little bit. They were on both sides, and there were two different images based on that Gemara in Yuma Ayin Bezim Abayz. He gives another idea that Maisa Choshev means you have to think about it before doing it. Anybody who's seen, like, you have an architect that, you know, designs a building and shows you what he wants to do, and then afterward they build the building. So Maisa Choshev is you don't just start embroidering, you think about what you want and then you embroider it. So first you like draw a little bit, you make pencil marks and you do like little things, and then you start embroidering all around. That's called Maisa Choshev. That's his second shot. I don't think they're arguing with each other. It's the same basic idea. But the idea behind this is that you went ahead and you made different pictures on both sides. Now that Ibn Ezra happens to be a really, really big machlokas. Rashi says, similarly, when weaving these Urios, they made pictures of Kruvim on them, not in the stitching, not in the needlework, which would be on the inside where you'd see one side on one side and you'd see the opposite. On the opposite side, you'd see the back of it. That's not what they did. They wove it on the outside of both sides of the Urios. The Urios were super thick, and then on top of that, they made these pictures on both sides. That's what they ended up doing. He gives an example, and here's the example Rashi gives. Like you would have lions on one side and eagles on the other side. And right there is where everybody looks at Rashi and says, whoa, 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 where are the lions and eagles coming from? You're making Kruvim. Look at the Pasuk. Kruvim, Masech Hoshev Taseh Osam. And Rashi mentions lions and eagles. That's the first thing that he says over there, and he gives that as his example. Again, this is the first opinion of the Ben Ezra, which makes a lot of sense. But it's strange. It could be he means Kruvim on both sides, but he says lions and eagles. And he compares it to this type of belt, this silk belt called a sash. I think that's what it calls it in the old French. This sash they put on where they put pictures on both sides as a design on that belt. And they put designs where you have designs on one side and designs on the other. So that's what you do. It's the same idea over here. The Maral Diskin says there had to be two different pictures. You know why? This is brilliant. Again, you have to know Rabbi Shulva Lev Diskin. The Maral Diskin was a Rav who lived around the turn of the 19th century, well, from the 19th century into the 20th century, early 1900s, in Yerushalayim. He was the Rav in Yerushalayim. Originally, he lived in Brisk. He was the rabbi in Brisk before the Brisk Rav. Right? He was a rabbi in Brisk, and he moved to Yerushalayim. He's a genius beyond geniuses. He's the one where you hear stories where he looked at a wall and he saw, he could tell you how many bricks were on the wall just by looking at it. That type of person. He could like look at a whole pile of svarim and say there's, you know, 232 svarim in that pile just by taking a glance at it. You know, those savant type things. That was the Maral Diskin. The Maral Diskin says it's obvious why you'd have that. Picture on one side, picture on the other side, and they didn't match up. Because the Urios were placed on top of the Kodesh and Kodesh HaKadoshim. That meant one side of it is facing the inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the inside of the Kodesh, which is unbelievably holy. The other side is facing the sky, which is not as holy. So listen to this. He says, if it was the same picture, you wouldn't remember what side the Urios go down on. You'd have the Urios and you'd overturn them. You put them on one side or the other. It's sort of like tzitzis. Tzitzis, if it wasn't for that little tag on the back of them, you'd have no idea which side is front, which side is back. That's why I like having that, the little, like the slit down the front, so you can tell which side goes in the front, which side goes in the back. Because otherwise, how do you know? Like those white cotton tzitzis that just have a little circle. You have no idea. How are you supposed to know which one is on each side, right? It's like this with the Urios, says the Maral Diskin. To know which one goes on the bottom and which one goes on top, they had specific pictures. One on the bottom and one on top. They made one that always would be on the bottom. So that when they were putting the Urios back on the Mishkan, they would say, wait, which side? Oh, right. This is the side that goes down, and this is the side that goes up. So it was specifically two different pictures. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, Shlomo.
Even if they had a mirror image, wouldn't it be facing the other way every time they did it?
If it was the same image, you know, where you're seeing the back of it, correct. But this, for sure, there was an image and an image on both sides. So meaning, it had to be different pictures, says Maral Diskin. An Ari on one side, a lion on one side, and an eagle on the other. Because if you had a lion and a lion, you might mess up and turn them over. Do you get what I'm saying? No. Well, yes and no. Yes, you could do that, right? You'd have the lion always facing one way, but that definitely could be messed up. You understand what I'm saying? But if you have only these images on the bottom, only these images on the top, you'd always remember this is how we have it. I would assume that that's the reason why he's saying it. Okay, if it was just Kruvim, even then, there's a machlokas what it looked like. Rav Aryeh Kaplan, the Living Torah, quotes the Midrash Gadol that it was a pattern of Kruvim. And I'm going to challenge everybody here over Shabbos. Maybe you know these Mishkan books, you know, the Mishkan books that have all the pictures in them and everything. Look up the Urios. I saw five picture books this week. All five of them had a machlokas in what was on the actual Urios themselves. Not in the ones on the outside of the Krushim, but rather the ones that were on top itself, what it looked like. The Living Torah quotes the Medrash HaGadol, and I looked up the Medrash HaGadol afterward. It says there was a pattern of Kruvim that were many. There were many of them. You know, five, six, seven, however many Kruvim there were on each side of the Urios themselves. Five or whatever it was. But they were different from one another. Rabbeinu Miyuchas, who's also a Rishon, argues there was one Kruv on one side, one Kruv on the other side, and that's it. It wasn't multiple Kruvim. It was one Kruv and one Kruv, right? And that was it. There was nothing else on the top of the Urios. So even though, again, the Urios were five and five, there would have been one on all of this and one on the others. I don't know if it's one per the five, right? Do you get what I'm saying? One per 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or one for the five and one for the five, or if it was like that, I don't know if Rabbeinu Miyuchas is saying that, but the way that that at least the Medrash HaGadol is saying it, it was a pattern of Kruvim. There could have been 20, 30, 40. It looked like little Kruvim one after the other. But the Mizrahi wonders, he says, well, what do Kruvim look like? What do Kruvim look like? They look like little cherubic little babies? Is that what they look like? Does anybody, we spoke about this before, what's the difference between a male Kruv and a female Kruv? How do you tell the difference between them? So, in one of the picture books, the male Kruv has short hair, and the female Kruv has long hair. But I don't know if that works so much. Right? One's pink, one's blue. I don't think they had colors. I don't think that's how it was. It's strange. How would you know? So he says, what do Kruvim look like? Was it cherubic little babies with like little angel wings, you know, and little fat cheeks? Is that what they look like? Is that what you're picturing? Is that what it is? So he says, he suggests at first that the eagles and the lions that it refers to over here, it's referring to pictures. When it says Kruvim, Kruvim don't have to be Kruvim. Kruvim just means nice pictures. Nice pictures. And therefore, it could be lions and eagles and things like that. And that's all it was. Only by the Kaporis was it different. The Kaporis, which obviously on top of the Aron Kodesh, that was for sure Kruvim. That was human-like malachi creatures, whatever you want to call it, that somehow went on top of there. But the other Kruvim, meaning the Kruvim that were on the Paroches, and the Kruvim that were on the Urios, and those Urios that surrounded, it could be they could have been anything. They really could have been anything. And he brings Uriah. His Raya, he says, is from Targum Onkelos. Targum Onkelos, by every mention of Kruvim, by the Urios, by the Paroches, by whatever ever out there, are always known as Tsuras Kruvim. Tsuras Kruvim. A picture of Kruvim. But by the kaporis, when it talks about the kruvim on top, the two kruvim that had their wings outstretched to one another, there he only translates it as kruvim. He doesn't say tsuras kruvim, he writes kruvim. Says the Mizrahi, Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi, that's the pshat, that it was pictures, and it could have been anything, right? But they were not necessarily kruvim. We don't know exactly what they look like. The Gur Aryeh says any tsuros, any pictures that have faces are called kruvim. Hear this, says the Maral? Because their faces were not exactly human-like. They're kruvim. They're close to it. When we say the kruvim had baby faces, it's not literal. It's not literal. It's not that you're going to see the kruvim standing outside of Gan Eden and you're going to see a gaga face, like a little bottle, like sitting outside of Gan Eden with an angelic body. That's not what it looks like. The Maral says kruvim don't look like little babies. Kruvim have faces that are not exactly human. That are not exactly human. The closest we have to that is when a baby is born. Obviously, the baby is born with a human face. I don't want to get in trouble here. But the baby's face is like close to it and getting to be more human. Meaning when the baby's in the womb, obviously it has a human face. But it's not exactly a regular person's face. So the way he says it, the Gur Aryeh says, there's something a little bit missing. The kruvim as well. They were animal faces. Animal faces are not exactly human. Even if you see those guys that look like their dogs, and you've seen them before, right? Who look exactly like their dogs. You see them walking their dog, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm not saying anything. I know. You don't look like the dog yet, right? That they have those, the face look exactly like. Nonetheless, there's a major difference between those two. Kruvim refer to any face that could be like an animal of some sort. That's the concept, says the Gur Aryeh. And therefore, any animal face could be a kruv. Anything. Because kruvim are just a word that describes a non-human type creature. A non-human type creature. That's the idea behind it. That's his one, that's the Gur Aryeh. The Maskil David adds that the Mizrahi himself earlier, he said that the kruvim in Yechezkel, Perek Yud Pasachov, apparently had four faces. Now, this is mentioned Yechezkel in the very first part with the Maisa Merkava, and it's things a little bit beyond us. But apparently the Kruvim themselves have four faces. The four faces are an Aryeh, a Nesher, a lion and an eagle, right? A shor, a bull, as well as an Adam, as well as a human being. And those are the four faces on each side of the Merkava, of the chariot itself. It's four faces that are all on the Kiseh. Says the Maskil LeDavid, it's possible that when we say eagle and lion, it's aspects of the kruvim. The kruvim were four-faced creatures. So they were kruvim with different faces. There's the Adam face, there's the shore face, there's the somehow the Aryeh face, and maybe the Nesher, right? That type of idea, maybe that's the idea behind it. It's a little bit hard because we do say that the shore was taken out and they put in a kruv instead. I don't know. There's something a little bit off about this Maskil LeDavid, but either way, the Maskil LeDavid says it's possible that's what it refers to over here. But there is a Medrash Rabban Bereishis. So hold on one second. There is a Medrash Rabban Bereishis that the kruvim themselves are shapeshifters. Now that really helps. Because how do you draw kruvim if they're shapeshifters? What do you do? How do you have a shape-shifting picture? How are there kruvim on the Aron Kodesh? So apparently, again, the way the Maral is saying it, maybe this is what it means. Kruvim could take on any face that was not fully human. Maybe that's what it was. The kruvim looked like anything you were thinking of when you looked at it. We don't have such a problem with that. The mun tasted like anything it tasted like. It may have smelled like anything you wanted it to smell like. It's possible that the kruvim looked like anything you wanted it to look like. And the innocence of looking at the kruvim in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, may have meant that they saw it as babies, as an innocent little baby, and that's the idea behind it. According to that Medrash Rabbah, you could draw on the Urias whatever you want. Because the kruvim don't have a real picture. You could draw lions and eagles and bears. Who knows? You could do everything. Whatever you want to put on that. Maybe that's the idea behind it. Yes? What's up?
According to the opinion that if there are four faces in one, is it like, is it on each side there's a different face, or is it that you
have... I don't know what it means by a side of a malach. That's the problem. So I can't answer that question. It's sort of like there were four faces if you looked at it, but there's no back to a malach. So I don't know. It's a great question. I'm not pushing you off on this. I just don't know. It seems like you looked at a malach and you saw all four. But I don't know what that means and how you could when one face has to be in the back, but somehow you were able to see that there were four faces to each one. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. So let's assume that there were different aspects to the face of the kruvim themselves. Yes. It would be awesome to see, wouldn't it? Yeah. It's sort of like a hologram where you see like, okay, either way, regardless. There's a party Zeus on here as well, and there's a Malbim. The Malbim talks about the Rambam and Rashi. It goes into the Machlokas, Reb Yehuda Nechamia, and Yuma Daf Ayin Hey, about what happens. We're going to skip. Okay, what was the point? Why did you put these 10 Yerios on? Why did they have that on top of there? Now, there, Yalkut Rabbeinu quotes a Targum Shir HaShir, and when Bnei Yisrael put the Yerios on top of the Mishkan, their faces glowed like Malachim. They glowed like angels. That's when they put the Urios on top. Clearly, there's something special about the Urios. Clearly, there's something different about them that made them something about them, that it brought down the Shekhinah and it kept the Shekhinah in. What is it? What exactly is about the Urios? The Talmud Das, Rav Sternbach, says that we know the Mishkan down here corresponds to the Mishkan above. There's a Mishkan below, there's a Mishkan above. There's a Beis HaMikdash below, there's a Beis HaMikdash above. Every single detail of the Mishkan has something to do with what's going on in Shemayim, just like everything down here has something connected with going on in the Olam HaElyonim, and whether we know it or not, it doesn't make a difference. If we understood the secrets of the Mishkan, we would understand the Shtalshalus of Shefa, the chains of goodness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings down to the world. If we understood it correctly, we'd understand that the Yerios somehow kept the Shekhinah in, but brought the Shefa down and allowed us to have everything that we have. So we don't know. But I want you to think about something. Just think that those Yerios were never destroyed. They still exist today. We have no idea what they did with them during the first Beis HaMikdash. We have no idea what they did with them when they came to Eretz Yisrael and they made a permanent Mishkan, and it no longer was in the temporary Krushim that they had made in the Midbar. When they came to Eretz Yisrael and they made a permanent Mishkan in either Gilgal or Nov or Shiloh, wherever it was, when they made that permanent structure, what did they do with the Urios? Did they keep it on top? Was it at the same dimensions? This is all for the Midbar. But through Nevi'im, you were allowed to switch it. It's clearly said by the Nevi'im, by the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, and the third as well. You have Yechezkel, you have Chagai, you have Shlomo Melech, you and Nasan and Avi and Gad Achoze. You had the ability to see certain things. So did they do anything with the Urios? We don't know. Says the Rav Sternbach, and I'm really taking from Rav Sternbach to say this, these may be saved for the future Beis HaMikdash. Perhaps these Urios have a secret to them that we just don't get yet. But it's the reason why Shefa comes down to the world, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows us to get good things. It's from the Urios, not just from the Aron Kodesh, so to speak. We need the Urios to be a conduit to bring down that good stuff in order to get it all for us. We just haven't seen it yet. We have absolutely no idea. That's the way that I want you to think of it for right now. As for the number, the Baal HaTurim says the number 10. Take a guess, guys. What's 10? What do you think the 10 refers to? 10 refers to the... Come on. Aseres Adibros. Come on, any kid would tell you, why do you have 10 Urios? They're going to tell you Aseres Adibros, right? You could ask your baby sister, and she will tell you Aseres Adibros. Everybody thinks of the 10 commandments when you think of 10, right? So the Baal HaTurim says it's 10. What in the world is the connection with that? And then 5 and 5. Isn't that interesting? 5 and 5, and they're connected with the chains. 5 on one luach, 5 on the other luach. So you have the luchos right there. So what in the world is pshat? The Baal HaTurim says it clearly. What in the world is pshat? I'm not going to be able to go through everything. I'm going to try to go through the Shem Yishmol, though. The Shem Yishmol says this was done purposely. Even though it would have been really easy to just sew all 10 together. You sewed 5 together. You sewed 5 together. Why not just sew all 10 together? It's done on purpose. Showing them the Urios, 5 and 5 chained together, reminded them of the Luchos. Reminded them of the Malachim they saw on Har Sinai. They had Matan Torah, and these people saw Matan Torah. They needed a constant reminder that Matan Torah had happened. When they go to the Mishkan, and they see these curtains overhanging. Now granted, on top of these curtains were the Urios Izim. On top of the Urios Izim was the Oros Elim Adomim and the Oros Tchashim. So they may not have seen the Malachim on the Urios. But when they took down the Mishkan and traveled, the Urios were shown to them. They could see the Malachim. I mean, the Urios on the outside of the Krashim showed them the Malachim. It's a constant reminder of the Aseres Adibros that we had Matan Torah, we had something there. So they could say it again and again and again. And obviously the Urios Izim, which were 6 and 5, is Torah Shabbat Alpeh with Torah Shebechsav, that the source, so to speak, of the entire Torah is the Aseres Adibros on the bottom. That is the base. The baseline is the Aseres Adibros. And from there comes Torah Shebechsav and Torah Shebechsav that are connected to each other with chains. You cannot remove Torah Shebechsav from Torah Shebechsav, that they're connected to each other in every which way. And then on top of that, you have everything else. Perhaps the idea behind the Aseres Adibros is entirely to remind them of their purpose of their existence. The whole world exists because of your Matan Torah, what you accepted in Matan Torah. Maybe that's the idea of what we're trying to do over here. Now there's an Orach Chaim HaKadosh. I'm not going to go through all of this. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh goes into the Shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, saying that it's clear to him that four is being used all over. They're four amos wide, 28 amos long, 40 altogether, etc., to stand for the 40 days. He says the four, as well as the Sheish, Tcheles, Argaman, and Tlas Shani, stands for the four-letter name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And although this gets a little bit beyond our understanding, what the Yud, the He, the Vav, and the He of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name means, just know there's an Or HaChaim HaKadosh who takes it all and puts it down for you and explains how these Yerios were really a representation of how the Shekhinah is brought down to the world, how it stays in our world, and how it seems that we live in a world of Elokim, which is Teva, nature. Ho Elokim is the gematria of Teva, of the same thing as nature itself, of HaTeva. I'm sorry, Elokim is HaTeva 86, right? Nonetheless, there's something special about this as well. And the Shach Ala Torah, one of the Talmidim of the Arizal, also talks about this, going into the Milui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, how each letter can be spelled out. Yud is Yud Vav Dalet, and Hey is Hey Aleph, or Hey Vav, or Hey Yud, or Hey Hey. And he goes into each one, but that's a little bit beyond this, and we're not going to go through. The Kli Yakar combines that Orach Chaim HaKadosh with the Shem Yishmo. He says, yeah, they do represent the Asara Zedibros, but they also represent the Asara Mamaros. The Gemara tells us the world was created with 10 utterances, 10 Vayomers. And if we look at Bereishis, it says the word Vayomer 10 times. Now, as a timeout, it actually says Vayomer 9 times in reference to creation. 10th time for something else entirely, but 9 times in reference to creation. And the Gemara asks, what about the 10th? And they say Bereishis is like Vayomer. So it counts as a Vayomer as well. So, but there are 10 utterances, right, in which the world was created. But we know that the world was weak. The world is ready to fall apart. The world couldn't stand that way until the Aseret HaDibros came and strengthened the world and allowed the world to stay. Meaning, the world is created with 10 utterances, 10 Vayomers, but the world couldn't stay that way. We need Vayedaber. Vayedaber is a harsher Lashon, a Lashon Kasha, says the Gemara. That through those 10 utterances, through the Vayedabers, the 10 Vayedabers, we have one after the other, they connect that somehow we're able to make the world into the world that we have today. Says the Kli Yakar, every one of us has to remind ourselves, there's the Vayomer, we have Rachamim, we're put in this world to do some great things, and we're put in the world in the beginning with lots of chesed. We get a lot of chesed from our parents as babies, we get a lot of chesed from our teachers as children, we get a lot of chesed from other people when we're growing up, but soon it comes to Vayedaber. When it's time to grow up, you stop and you say, I'm ready to go, I'm ready to do what I need to do, I'm ready to stop and do everything and to be kosher, says the Kli Yakar. That's what the Mishkan represented. The Mishkan represented these skins on the bottom, the five and the five, to remind them that you start off with Vayomer, you end with Vayedaber, you build yourself up, so to speak. And he goes into Benan Lachavir, Benan Lamakum as well. And our last one is Rav Hirsch. Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch actually has in his selected writings a very large piece on the entire Mishkan, how the Mishkan represented all of Klal Yisrael and the human body. It's a microcosm, that means a small little version, of what the human body is. Think of it this way. Think of the Aron Kodesh right in the middle with the Luchos, etc., as being the brain of the person. Think, you're the Aron Kodesh. The Aron Kodesh is coming this way. The Shulchan is there. Again, if we have the Kodesh Kedashim right here, the Kodesh is that way. The Shulchan is there. My left arm can reach out from the brain to get to the Shulchan. The right arm is the menorah, right? We all know that it's Orech Yamim B'Yemina. Orech Yamim is the Arichos Yamim of Chochma of the menorah. Bismola Osher V'Chavod. Riches and honor come from the Shulchan itself. The brain is here, this and this. The Mizbeach Hazav with the Ketores was supposed to be the heart of the person. And the Mishkan, the Kodesh, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim represents the human body. The human body and what he needs in order to go through. He understands something that's really, really special. He says the Aron Kodesh was made of two different materials. There were three Arons. Gold, surrounded by a wood Aron, surrounded by a golden Aron. Three different Aronos, says Rashi. Gold on the inside, wood, and then gold. He says wood stands for growth. But growth can be done in a very, very wrong way. Wood stands for growth because that's wood grows, right? Gold is stagnant. Wood is stagnant. The gold is stagnant. So he says, by putting gold surrounding the wood, what you're doing is essentially allowing your growth to be limited to the way that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you to grow. As we all know, there are people who have tried to go too far, like Elisha ben Avuya, or Ben Azai, or Ben Zoma, and have failed to get to what they needed to because they tried getting past what they knew was the right thing for them. The Aron Kodesh stands for our abilities to understand, but our limitations in our understanding. And that's okay. You're allowed to be limited. And when you need to reach out to your form of Parnassa, you get your Parnassa. When you need to reach out to learn more Torah and to gain in your Chochmah, your wisdom, you reach out to that. The lines that go from one to the other, that's the concept. What does that mean for the Urios? What do the Urios stand for? Well, in this sense, the Urios are like the skin on top of the body. Almost like the form that allows the Mishkan, the body, to form. It wouldn't be able to form. It would be out there in the open if not for the skin, the body itself that surrounds. And that's seemingly what the Urios are supposed to be. Meaning, in this world, we make for ourselves a Mishkan. Our body begs us to eat that piece of cake, to look at that person who's inappropriately dressed, to do that thing that's wrong. That's what our body tells us to do. And our brain and our heart and our minds are filled with this idea of, no, that's not what we're about. We keep our bodies holy. It's all about the inside, not what's on the outside. The Urios, so to speak, and what the outside of the Mishkan represented was an ability to stop themselves from going any further. Not allowing yourself to be fall prey to the body's taivas, to the body's desires and what you want to do. To build up the idea of the tree of knowledge and your table of happiness in this world, making yourself a mishkan, a mikdash, a place for the Shekhinah to rest within you. And when you do that, the kruvim come down, those are the pictures on top, to surround us, helping us. That's the malachim, ki malachov, yitzav eloch, that surround us and come with us wherever we go and allow to go through. The Kohen Gadol is human perfection. Human perfection, that's what the Kohen Gadol is supposed to represent. He wears the blue, red, scarlet red, purple wool together with the linen, even though it's shatness. He wears those clothing together. If that's so, it's possible that the same thing is done by the Urios. The perfect human being is represented by the Urios that are made of those four materials together, showing that if a person takes that in and tries to be the perfect human being like the Kohen Gadol is, then all of a sudden you're able to get everything you need. Everything's right there for you, which is such a cool concept, the idea behind it. I did say that was going to be the last. I'll just tell you one over here. The Arugas Abosim says that the word Sheish Mash Zor means a lot more than what you think. Sheish Mash Zor obviously should be linen that's woven together, that's twisted together. He says it should be Sheish Shazur. Sefer HaChinuch says in his Akdama, it's brought down by the Chai Yodim and Klal Aleph Sifhei, there are six constant mitzvos that are with us at all times. Six of them that we always do at all times. Number one, belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number two, don't believe in idols. Loving Hashem and fearing Hashem, right? Those are the obvious ones right over there. Number five, keeping away from those things that we shouldn't get involved in. And number three, knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unique and one in the world. Each one is a mitzvah. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yelech Elohim Acherim Aponai, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, V'yahavta Eis Hashem Elokecha, Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, and Belo Sesu Acharei Levavchem V'Acharei Neichem. Those are the six mitzvahs, constant mitzvahs. If you've ever seen the books, the six constant mitzvahs, it's a small little black book by Art Scroll. It has mitzvah tamidus, it has a daily thing that you go through. It's a beautiful book, and I highly suggest everyone gets it. The six constant mitzvos, six mitzvos to medios. And it goes through. It's possible that the idea behind this is that our Yitzhar is on us all day long. If we concentrate on these six daily mitzvos, we'll never be hurt. And maybe that's the concept. If we have Sheish, the six constant mitzvos, Mosh from the Zor, it will move us away. The word Yamush means to move from one to the other. Mosh from the Zor, the stranger, which is known as the Yetzer Hara, the Satan HaMashchis. Maybe that's the pshat, that the Sheish will allow us to be mush from the Zor, and we won't be able to be ruled over in any which way. Perhaps that's the concept that we'll be learning out from right over here. Shkai, guys, we'll stop with that.